It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with legendary Bay Area jazz and blues singer Kim Nally. We had a solid interview about her new 2022 CD, Kim Nally Band, with Houston Person, I Want a Little Boy. In the midst of uncertain times and crisis, her voice offers solace and joy. As American society seems determined to unravel, she holds firm to timeless musical truths, delivering a program of songs that embody the best of American culture. She was a born singer from a family that boasts several generations of jazz musicians. It's what she was around. She was taught piano by her great-grandmother and studied classical music and theater in high school before relocating to San Francisco. She has a lot of vigor. It's a wonderful story. Enjoy.
Well, hey, thank you for taking a minute out for the show today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for asking me. I really appreciate the plug and everything.
Sure, my pleasure. So your brand new album with Houston Person, I Want a Little Boy, is, of course, a wonderful album, and it's coming out during a time where the world is starting to wake up, live gigs, hopefully there's healing.
There's so many people coming out with CDs right now. It's like, oh my goodness, it's crazy. We actually had this in the can for a little bit, but we couldn't work on it because of COVID. We actually laid the tracks down, and I couldn't get it mastered because of some of the coronavirus restrictions. And I'm in California, so it's pretty, they're pretty strict here.
But it has to feel good to, at this particular time, to be able to say, hey, here I am, I'm at it, let's go.
Yeah, it is. And then also, it's like a different type of music maybe than my last album. I just feel in a different mood than I was before, and I wanted to do something that was a little bit more classic and a little bit more comforting, because I feel like we've all really been through the paces these past couple of years. I wanted to do something that was, very grown folks music, as Houston likes to say.
Yeah. Talk about that. What was it like to work with someone like Houston that has so much mileage on his jazz odometer?
Well, I've known Houston for a very long time. I knew Etta as well, and we always had a very particular relationship, both on and off stage. Platonic, but just, it's just, I don't know. It's like we don't even have to think about it. It's just, I give him space, he fills in the space, and, there's this thing that most saxophone players do. Okay, so what happens with most saxophone players is that you have the vocalist come, and then she comes in, and she or he builds it up to a certain pitch, and gets it all the way up to this level, and then the soloist comes, and it goes down, and then they build it back up again. Houston will take it from exactly the energy level that I left it at and then keep bringing it up. And he's the only person, one of the only people I know that does something like that, where it's just like he's just feeding right off of whatever I'm doing and just bringing it up a little higher. But, besides the mileage that we put in just performing together, and this is a long overdue album. Long overdue. Everybody was like, when are you going to record? Why aren't you ever recording? I'm like, I don't know. We just haven't done it. And so we finally got it out. We've been playing together for quite a while now. And then, we also hang out a lot after the gig because he's very, very much into education. And I have a PhD in history, and no small part to some of Houston's help as a, just giving me oral histories and his willingness to be interviewed and things like that. And he's always been a big proponent of education, and so we've always gotten together. Just even when we're gigging, we get together for breakfast and just talk. And a lot of people, they don't do that. They hit it for the gigs, and that's about it. But we're very close. We're close friends. That's for sure.
The one thing about this is there's been so much that's been going on you know, not only around the world, but in America. What are you hoping with this music that folks get out of this, how they feel about this project?
A little bit of healing, a little respite. Things are hard. Things are really hard right now. They're hard for me, too. You know, I don't like to wear everything on my sleeve. As my grandmother used to say, you know, it always can be worse. So,
you know? So yeah.
I really can't complain. But I do want people to feel a little bit better. And I found myself during coronavirus going back to certain things that comforted me, you know, tunes that I had forgotten about, tunes from my youth or tunes that I heard my grandmother play or my mother play, and then they would bring me a certain amount of comfort. And a lot of the repertoire that on this is that type of music. You know, definitely, you know, Houston picked out, you know, quite a bit of it. We have a lot of the same sensibilities as far as, you know, what we like in general. You know, we like those tunes that are slightly off the beaten track a bit, but for a certain group of people, you know, at a certain time, that was the jam. You know, like I noticed you guys play like Esther Phillips. You know, it's like Esther Phillips, you know, if you in the know, then you know that's it right there.
Yeah.
So she's the low man right there. But it's like a certain, you know, it's a certain crowd, a certain crowd of people. But he plays to the people, and I play to the people, too. I don't find anything wrong with entertaining as well as being political. Sometimes I'm very political. I'm a very political creature. But I am also somebody that believes in entertaining and, you know, finding these songs that where we can find humanity within each other, come together. And sometimes they're really weird things. Like I remember one time we were doing some gig in Texas, and this is back when Richard Wyans was still alive. Oh my gosh, he was such a great piano player. And we're doing this gig, and then all of a sudden I call the Tennessee Waltz. He's like, "What? You calling the Tennessee Waltz?" I called the Tennessee Waltz, and everybody just jumped out of their chairs like Jack in the Boxes. And, you know, we did a wonderful, like, jazz waltz of Tennessee Waltz. And it's something that most jazz musicians probably wouldn't call that. There's some that would, but, you know, we call different things, you know. I remember we were playing at a blues club. And, I mean, this is not just a blues club. This is like a Chitlin' Circuit blues and he started playing for his instrumental people, you know, the Barbra Streisand tune, people. And the club owner had tears in his eyes. He goes, "The other people that play here, they're just musicians. This is art. You know, you know, we do what we want to do when we want to do it. And sometimes it's a little bit, you know, eclectic, but it's stuff that touches them in certain ways. Or like, oh, who's what Elvis tune even? It's really, really weird. It doesn't matter what tune you do. It matters how you do it. And if we can touch people's heart in some type of way, if we can make them feel happy, if we can remind them of, I don't know, their dad putting them in the bed one night or something like that. That's kind of, you know, that's kind of what we're going for right now, you know, on this particular album. You know, I think something in the trajectory of albums that I've done, this is what I needed, but I felt like it's kind of what the soul of the country needed too as well. And beyond, you know, I haven't been touring internationally in a while because of coronavirus, and then I have a 6-year-old and a 10-year-old that has cramped my touring style considerably. It's not from lack of gigs. It's like probably I could be gigging every night if I wanted to, but I really wanted to be a mother as long as they wanted to spend time with me, because it'll be blink and they're not going to want to spend time with me anymore. So I might as well get, you know, get them in while I can get all those huggies in, and when they want to hang out with their friends all the time, I can do some more touring again. There's no rush.
You know, you have been called, you know, you're legendary in the San Francisco Bay Area. Talk to me a little bit about growing up. Did you, were you born and raised in the Bay Area?
No, I wasn't. My folks are mostly from the Northeast. I've got a couple of generations of jazz musicians inside of my family. My great uncle used to play with Dexter Gordon and Duke Ellington, and he was a Tuskegee Airman, expat, and you know he's done quite a bit of things. Let's put it that way. Everybody sang or played or did something, but I always was a little bit unusual because I always wanted to sing or learn how to play songs that were maybe a generation or two older than me, you know. So like not my mom's songs, I wanted my grandmother's songs and my great-grandmother's songs. So it was just always like that, you know. And then my great-grandmother, oh, she was a great piano player. She had all the real hip changes. She would show me all the nice substitutions, and she loved Monty Alexander. That was her man right there. She's like, Monty Alexander, you know. So we had people that we particularly liked inside of the family. And I mean, Nancy Wilson, she was in style, then all of a sudden she was out of style. She was never out of style in our family, that's for sure. Nina Simone, and so many wonderful players that I think people forget about, because sometimes people come in vogue and then they go out of vogue, and then but they forget that they're still playing the entire time. Somebody like a Jackie Terrison or somebody like that, you know, like he was the best thing since sliced bread for a while, and then you didn't see him in the press all the time, but it's not like he disappeared. It's not like he stopped making great music, you know, or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, we've always been a very musical family, and everybody was expected that they would play something or sing something. If they sang, like, I don't know, say a Christmas carol or something like that, you know, it would be like three-part harmony or three- or four-part harmony.
So what was the first live jazz show you ever saw that really blew you away?
You know, because everybody played in my family, I spent a lot of time in bars listening to live jazz shows. And I it's hard for me to remember, like, exactly who I was listening to, because, you know, some of them would be just, you know, would be family members. Maybe they were playing with other bands and things like that. But I do remember spending a lot of time in bars as a kid, and then getting really bored after the music was over. And I was like, why do grown-ups hang out in bars? The music is done. Why are we still here? I just couldn't understand the fascination, you know, because I didn't drink and I didn't know what was going on. So, you know, so it's really, it would be really hard for me to say, because I just grew up in that situation where not only was I in bars listening to music because family members were playing music. I had family members that owned bars. I think my uncle owned a little bar. And then even beyond that, then, you know, people were sitting in and people were going to jam sessions, you know. So that was part of the whole thing too. You know, you go different places and you bring your acts and, you know, you hope you get a chance to sit in. I always consider myself somebody who is more, I mean, I studied, but I feel like I'm more jam session trained. I'm more trained by my elders than anything else, you know, where you carry their equipment and you drive them around and do all this stuff and then and wait for them to dispense a little nugget of wisdom on you when you've master that little nugget, then they'll give you another little nugget, you know, but not before then. You know, that's more the tradition that, you know, that I came out of, you know. I mean, there weren't really, like, jazz schools or anything like that, you know.
Sounds like the school that you went to, so to speak, was actually in the club, was actually seeing this, what were some really good pieces of advice that you got that's really reverberated in you up to today that you remember?
You know, some of the things that I remember is, all right, baby, yeah. You gonna start off, you gonna do this, you gonna do a ballad, and you gonna do My Funny Valentine, because everybody knows My Funny Valentine, and you gonna do it in A minor. And I know that's not your key, but that's the key that they know it in, so that's that you gonna do it in, because if they sound good, then you gonna sound good, and then you gonna kill it, you gonna slay it, because I know you slay it, because you know it, and you gonna lay all that stuff on them, you gonna lay it. Cannonball, you're going to lay that big George Coleman on them, and then they're going to ask you to do another. But you're a singer. They're only going to let you sing two tunes. And so the next one, you call the blues, you know, and you call one of them sax keys. You call E-flat or you call B-flat, and then you lay some of that scat on them, you know. So I had some definite lessons that were going on. And then, you know, and then certain things like the gig is not over until the last person has been spoken to and the last hand has been shook. Nowadays, the last selfie has been taken. The last, you know, autograph has been signed. You know, that's part of the gig. That is part of how things go. And, you know, maybe that's not like it for some people. Maybe some people don't feel like that and are more offish. That's not how I was raised, you know. That's for sure. You know, and that you respected your elders. You talked back to the musicians on stage and give them some love. You know, we didn't listen to music quietly. That's a really weird thing when I go to clubs and it's like really, really, really quiet. And I'm just like, wow, nobody's saying anything. You know, it's kind of like the gentrification of jazz, you know. And usually you'll go to like one of my gigs and there'll be like some old guys dressed up in these colorful suits, like those Nigerian dandies that are wearing like lavender and yellow striped suits. And then and they're young and they're like, that's right. Play it like a T.I. tip. Yeah, yeah. Don't hurt yourself, honey. Rah, rah. And, you know, that's my scene. You know, that's really my scene. And, you know, I mean, if I really need to, you know, impress somebody with my vocalese, you know, I'll drag something out that, you know, shows that, you know, that, yes, I too can write vocalese to Horace Silver tunes, or yes, I can scat or anthology or whatever. Yes, I can scat, you know, a damn-ass good bass solo. But, you know, it's not about showing off. That's the important thing. It's not about showing everybody how good you are all the time. It's about making people feel a certain way, and at least for me, you know. I mean, I have different goals inside of their art and what they want to do and how they want to make people feel. And I want people to feel good. And then I would say the other thing I would want them to do is to learn something that maybe they didn't know before. You know, maybe something about a tune or a player, or what a player had to do to get to the gig, or what was going on, you know, historically. You know, like I mentioned, I have my PhD in history, so it's my other passion, and it fits nicely into jazz. So, you know, and I just really love all that old stuff. I have, and I probably always will, you know. Just even having Maria on the album is just, like, amazing. I didn't even think she would do the recording with me. And then it was like, well, let's just call her up and see if she'll come in. And I'm like, really? Should we just call her up? And it's like, yes, just call her. Let's call her. And so we did, and I knew her from Teatro Zanzani, because I had played at this show called Teatro Zanzani, which had like Ann Wilson, it was in it, and Joan Baez, Maria Muldaur, and then I was also one of the, you know, Zanzani. So we had kind of met each other like that week when you're building the show and you're going from one show into the other show. So I knew her from that. And she was like, yeah, let's do it. And I just couldn't believe it because I don't know if you know this about me, and not many people know this about me, but I used to be this big deadhead, okay? You know? So I'm this huge fan of Maria Muldaur back when she was in the Jerry Garcia band. People are always going like, oh, yes, Midnight with the Oasis, little, references, But for me, I always think of her being with Jerry and things like that. So, she's wonderful. She's a wonderful singer that is very also steeped in history and tries very, very, very hard to make sure that she gets, especially African-American gospel and things like that, done correctly. She cares about these things, and I care about these things, so we have that in common with each other as well. So that was really fun, and we'll probably end up doing some more tunes together on the show than what we recorded on the album. But that was kind of like an 11th hour, like, let's call Maria. I'm really glad that we did.
Let me ask you this. For all of the musicians that you've played with, all of the musicians you've seen in your life, if you could get into a time machine and go back in time and see anybody anywhere in the history of jazz, where are you going? Who are you going to see?
I feel like that's a question that shows how old we are. Because right now, these kids these days, the students I'm teaching, they can go on YouTube and they can go back and listen to everything. Stuff I never got a chance to listen to. I just learned stuff from sheet music, or maybe waited until somebody was willing to blow the dust off of an LP or a 78 and let me listen, and Lord knows you didn't talk, when somebody was playing an LP. It's such a different time and age. It's like they've heard everything. I really can't think of having any kind of connection for the piano player deeper than the one I have with my piano player I have now, Tammy Hall. She's my sister. She's my friend. She's, She's so much to me. I mean, it's like, obviously, I would love to play with Duke Ellington. Obviously, I'd love to, play with Fletcher Henderson. God, I'd love to play with, Valeda Snow or Louis Armstrong. Of course, I would love to play with all those people. But I feel incredibly blessed to, to have the people that I'm playing with. And if anything, I should have just asked people earlier to play with me, when I was a little bit younger. I should have been a little bit more forthright and asked people to play with me. I didn't know that I could do that. It's always a hard one, and especially when you're talking to somebody who does African-American history, because when you go back in time, you get all this wonderful music, but you also have to deal with a bunch of this, I'm not going to say any explicatives because we're, on radio or anything, but the gig isn't just what's on the bandstand. You got to get to the gig. And what door do you use to get to the gig? And what happens to you outside the gig? What happens to you when you're coming home from the gig? And where do you go when you're done with the gig? Where do you get to, what kind of place can you afford? All of these things are very relevant concerns. I would think very, very hard about intentionally wishing myself back to Jim Crow. There's a lot of great things that happened during the Harlem Renaissance, but we can't forget that the reason the Harlem Renaissance happened is because people were being lynched and such crazy numbers that black people, they congregated in cities for protection. We can't separate that segregation and Jim Crow from what was going on then, at all. So as much as I would love to step into a time machine. You might be asking the wrong the wrong girl.
I get it. I'm glad you threw that spin on it for sure. So let me ask you this. Everyone has a perception of you, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. You have a perception of yourself. Who do you think you are?
I think that I am a very intelligent woman with a high EQ and a high IQ, who's very hardworking, who came from nothing and grew up in the projects from a single mother during the height of the crack epidemic and made something out of herself. That's what I think.
One last question, you know, as we do return to live music, what do you hope we all realize about the power of live music that we've been away from for a while?
That you're not going to get the same experience unless you're in the same room. The audience is a member of the band. I've always said that. I said that before coronavirus, and it's even more noticeable now. You know, that people suddenly didn't have an audience. You know, you can't play into a computer. That's not jazz. Jazz is a live art form. It's always been, you know, a live art form. Yes, there's recordings of jazz, but, you know, it's always been a jazz club, a live thing. And you play what you play in part because of the audience that you have there. And the audience informs you to how many solos you're going to take, or maybe what note you're going to hit, or how long you're going to hold that note, or what song you're going to do next, what do they need next. And those are those things that I'm looking forward to as we hopefully gradually get out of coronavirus, is having the missing member of my band, the audience.
Beautiful. Kim, thank you for opening up today about the new album, your life and music. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for asking me. You take care.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and singers in San Francisco, Kansas City, and spots all over the globe, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Kim for her time, energy, and cool. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. And finally, for everything Joe Domino related, go to JoeDomino.com. And if you feel like it, you can donate a few bucks to the Neon Jazz cause. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Hi, neighbor.
Neon Jazz.